And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today, September 29th, 272nd day of the year, 273rd in the leap years. 93 days remain until the end of the year. On this date in history, in 61 BC, Pompey the Great celebrates his third triumph for victories over the pirates and the end of the Mithridatic Wars on his 45th birthday. Now, for those that are not familiar with the Mithridatic Wars, there were three conflicts fought by Rome against the Kingdom of Pontus and its allies between 88 BC and 63 BC. They're named after Mithridates VI, the King of Pontus, who initiated the hostilities after annexing the Roman province of Asia into its Pontic Empire and committing massacres against the local Roman population known as the Asian Vespers. As Roman troops were sent to recover the territory, they faced an uprising in Greece organized and supported by Mithridates. Mithridates was able to mastermind such general revolts against Rome and played the magistrate to the Optimates party off against the magistrates of the Popularius party in the Roman Civil War. In spite of all that, it ended in a Roman victory, confirmed by the Treaty of Dardanos, signed by Lucius Sulla and Mithridates. Greece was restored to Roman rule, and Pontus was expected to restore the status quo in Asia Minor. As the treaty was barely implemented in Asia Minor, the Roman general Marina, in charge of retaking control of Roman territory in Asia, decided to wage a second war against Pontus. Now, the Romans got defeated in this second war and gave momentum to Mithridates, who then forged an alliance with Tigranes the Great, the Armenian king of kings. Tigranes was the son-in-law of Mithridates and was in control of an Armenian empire that included territories in the Levant. Pontus won the Battle of Chalcedon in 74 BC, gave support to Sicilian pirates against Roman commerce, and a third war began shortly after that. For this third war, the Romans sent the consul Lucilius to fight against Armenian Pontus. Lucilius won the Battle of Sabaria and the Battle of Tigranocerta, but his progress was nullified after the Battle of Artaxia and the Battle of Zela. Meanwhile, the campaign of Pompey against the Sicilian pirates in the Mediterranean was successful, and Pompey was named by the Senate to replace Lucilius. And Pompey's subsequent campaigns caused the collapse of the Armenian Empire in Levant, which gave the Romans control of Syria and Palestine, and the affirmation of Roman power over Anatolia, Pontus, and nearly all the eastern Mediterranean. Tigranes surrendered and became a client king of Rome. Hunted, stripped of his possessions in a foreign country, Mithridates had a servant kill him. His former kingdom was combined with one of his hereditary enemies, Bithynia, to form the province of Bithynia and Pontus, which would forestall any future pretender to the throne of Pontus. In not every case did the hereditary rulers keep either their hair or their thrones. In 1011, the Danes captured Canterbury, taking Aethelhe, Archbishop of Canterbury, as a prisoner. 1227, Frederick II, the Holy Roman Emperor, is excommunicated by Pope Gregory IX for his failure to participate in the Crusades. 1267, the Treaty of Montgomery recognizes Llewellyn ap Gyfold as Prince of Wales, but only so far as he's a vassal of King Henry III. 1364, English forces defeat the French in Brittany, ending the Battle of the Breton Succession. 1578, Tegucigalpa, central city of Honduras, is claimed by the Spaniards. 1717, an earthquake strikes Antigua, Guatemala, destroying much of the city's architecture. 1789, the U.S. Department of War first establishes a regular army with a strength of several hundred men. Also in 1789, the first U.S. Congress adjourns. 1829, the Metropolitan Police of London, later known as the Met, is founded. 1848, the Battle of Pakodz is a stalemate between Hungarian and Croatian forces, and it's the first battle of the Hungarian Revolution. 1850, the Papal Bull, which is kind of like a presidential executive order, Universalis Ecclesiae, restores Roman Catholic hierarchy in England and Wales. 1855, the Philippine port of Iloilo is open to world trade by the Spanish administration. 1864, American Civil War, the Battle of Chaffin's Farm is fought. Also in 1864, the Treaty of Lisbon defines the boundaries between Spain and Portugal and abolishes the Cuto Misto microstate. 1885, the first practical public electric tramway in the world is open in Blackpool, England. 1907, the cornerstone is laid at the Cathedral Church of St. Peter and St. Paul. It's better known as the Washington National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. 1911, Italy declares war on the Ottoman Empire. 1918, Bulgaria signs the Armistice of Salonika. 1918, the Hindenburg Line is broken by an Allied attack. That's World War I, of course. 1918, Germany's Supreme Army Command tells the Kaiser and the Chancellor to open negotiations for an armistice. 1923, the British Mandate for Palestine takes effect, creating mandatory Palestine. And for those that are not familiar with that, the land of Israel was a geopolitical entity established between 1920 and 48, a region of Palestine, under the terms of the League of Nations Mandate for Palestine. During the First World War, an Arab uprising against Ottoman rule and the British Empire Egyptian Expeditionary Force under General Edmund Allenby drove the Turks out of Levant during the Sinai-Palestine campaign. The UK had agreed in the McMahon-Hussein correspondence it would honor Arab independence if they revolted against the Ottomans. But the two sides had a different interpretation of this agreement, and in the end, the UK and France divided up the area under the Sykes-Picot Agreement, which the Arabs believed was a betrayal. And further complicating the issue was the Balfour Declaration of 1917 promising British support for a Jewish national home in Palestine. Towards the end, the British and the French set up a joint occupied enemy territory administration in what had been Ottoman Syria. British achieved legitimacy for their continued control by obtaining a mandate from the League of Nations in June of 1922. The formal objective of the League of Nations mandate system was to administer parts of what had been the Ottoman Syria. See, the Ottoman Empire collapsed completely as a result of World War I. And during the mandate, the area saw the rise of national movements in both the Jewish and Arab communities. But Israel dominated the area militarily. 1923, the French mandate for Syria and Lebanon took effect. 1923, the first American track and field championships for women are held. 1932, the Chaco War. Last day of the Battle of Boquerón between Paraguay and Bolivia. 1942, Avro Anson's collide midair over New South Wales and Australia remain locked together, but land safely. 1941, German troops with the aid of local Ukrainian collaborators begin the two-day Baba Yar massacre. 1949, the Communist Party of China writes the Common Program for the future People's Republic of China. 1954, the Convention Concerning CERN, the European Organization for Nuclear Research, is signed. 1957, the Kishtim disaster is the third worst nuclear accident ever recorded. Now, there's not a lot known about it, but it was a radioactive contamination accident that occurred on the 29th of September in 1957 in Mayak, which is a plutonium production site in Russia for nuclear weapons and nuclear fuel reprocessing. The event occurred in Azhortsk, a closed city built around the Mayak plant. It was a level 6 disaster on the international nuclear event scale, making it the third most serious nuclear accident ever recorded. The only ones more serious were the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear disaster and the Chernobyl disaster. Both are level 7 on the scale. At least 22 villages were exposed to radiation from the disaster, with a total population of about 10,000 people evacuated. Some were evacuated after a week, but it took almost 2 years to evacuate all the radiated areas. The disaster spread hot particles over more than 20,000 square miles, 52,000 square kilometers. And that covered an area occupied by about 270,000 people. Now, since the Azhortsk Mayak was not marked on maps, the disaster was named after Kishtim, the nearest known town. The Russians have had quite a number of accidents. They just don't talk about them. We'd have CNN in there blowing it all out of proportion before the dark. Okay, 1971, Oman joins the Arab League. 1972, China-Japan relations. Japan establishes diplomatic relations with the People's Republic of China after breaking official ties with the Republic of China. 1975, WGPR becomes the first black-owned and operated television station in the United States. 1979, the dictator Francisco Macias of Equatorial Guinea is shot by soldiers from Western Sahara. 1988, NASA launches STS-26, the first mission to go into space after the Challenger disaster. If you remember, the Challenger is the shuttle that blew up. 1990, construction of the Cathedral Church. St. Peter and St. Paul, better known as Washington National Cathedral, is completed in Washington on this date in 1990, the YF-22, which would later become the F-22 Raptor, flies for the first time publicly. Anytime anything is announced, it's been in the air 2 or 3 years before that. 1991, a Haitian coup d'etat occurs. 1992, Brazilian President Fernando Collor de Mello is impeached. 2004, the asteroid 4179 Tutatis passes within 4 lunar distances of Earth. 2004, Bert Rutan's Ansari Spaceship One performs a successful spaceflight, the first of two required to win the Ansari X Prize. 2006, a Boeing 737 and an Embraer 600 collide in midair, killed 154 people and triggering the Brazilian aviation crisis. 2007, Calder Hall, the world's first commercial nuclear power station, is demolished in a controlled explosion. 2009, an 8.1 magnitude Samoa earthquake results in a tsunami that kills 189 and injures hundreds. 2011, the special court in India convicted all 269 accused officials for atrocity on Dalitus and 17 for rape in the Fachadi case. That was a mass crime that occurred June 20th, 1992 in the village of Bashatsi in the Dharmapura district in the Tamil Nadu. A team of 155 forest personnel, 108 policemen, and 6 revenue agents entered a tribal-dominated village and searching for smuggled sandalwood. Under pretext of conducting a search, the team ransacked the villagers' property, destroyed their houses, killed their cattle, assaulted 100 villagers, and raped 18 women. Well, see what else we got. 2013, over 42 people are killed by members of Boko Haram at the College of Agriculture in Nigeria. 2016, 11 days after the Uri attack, the Indian Army conducts surgical strikes against suspected militants in Pakistani-administered Kashmir. 2019, violence and a low turnout mar the 2019 Afghan presidential election. And in 2019, at least 59 people reported dead due to monsoon rains in Uttar Pradesh and Bihar in India. 350 had died this year due to rain in India, Nepal, and Bangladesh. Okay, we have, on this date in 106 BC, Pompey, the Roman general and politician, was born. He died in 48 BC. Lived a long time. Let's talk about unbelievable number of births and deaths. Holidays and observances, Christian feast day, Rip Shimi, the archangels Michael, Gabriel, and Raphael, one of the four quarter days of the Irish calendar, called Michaelmas in some Western liturgical traditions, Inventor's Day in Argentina, Victory of Boca Raton Day in Paraguay, and World Heart Day. Let's see what else we might have. In 522 BC, Darius I of Persia kills Magian usurper Guamata, securing his hold as king of the Persian Empire. That particular incident could well have changed world history as we know it. 480 BC, Battle of Salamis. The Greek fleet under Themistocles defeats the Persian fleet under Xerxes I. 1567, War of Religion breaks out in France. The Huguenots try to kidnap King Charles IX. Let's see. 1948, Hamlet, directed by and starring Laurence Olivier, opens in Park Avenue Cinema. And on this date in 1916, American oil tycoon John D. Rockefeller becomes the world's first billionaire. Horatio Nelson was born on this date in 1758. Miguel de Cervantes in 1547. Anita Ekberg in 1931. Jerry Lee Lewis is 85 years old. And 1972, Robert McNamara. I knew his daughter-in-law. Terry, a former U.S. Secretary of Defense, is almost thrown overboard on a ferry by an artist wanting to confront him on his role in escalating U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War. Let's see. The Titans and the Vikings suspend team activities today after NFL's first COVID-19 outbreak. This is not anywhere near over with. 1818, and Samuel Morse weds Lucretia Walker in Concord, New Hampshire. Let's see. Louis Ventoux died on this date in 2001. Tom Bradley died in 1998. Rudolph Diesel died in 1913. Okay. Okay. In 219, Batavian soldiers consecrate the altar on Hercules Magusanus, Rome. 235, St. Pontianus ends his reign as Catholic Pope. 440, Leo the First, or Leo the Great as he liked to be known, is installed as Pope. 855, Benedict III begins his reign as Catholic Pope. 1364, Battle of Auray, English forces defeat the French in Brittany. 1564, Robert Dudley becomes the Earl of Leicester. Well, on that note, we are going to turn to our topic for today, which is more secret societies. You know, there's been a lot of secret societies in history. Some of them are very well known, others not so much. Now, the one we're going to start out talking about is the Knight of the Maccabees. Despite its name, the Knights of the Maccabees have no connection to living Jews, but initiation rites enact scenes involving the Maccabees, which was an ancient Jewish sect. This organization was formed in 1878, as far as anyone knows. And that was established in London, Ontario, in 1878 by members of the Foresters. The Knights of the Maccabees soon became a fundamentally American organization. Its name comes from a Jewish tribe from the 2nd century B.C. that revolted against Antiochus IV of Syria in the name of religious freedom. But in 2 years, it had over 10,000 members, many of whom relied on the group's insurance plans. At first, the group accepted any white male between the ages of 18 and 70. They did make stipulations. They wouldn't accept drinkers and those in high-risk jobs. But soon, because of high death benefit costs, it was losing money. In 1880, the group reorganized in Buffalo, New York. After a brief break with the Canadian wing, the group reunited a year later with a new constitution and a new operating agenda. Insurance became the group's most attractive feature, such that membership topped 330,000 at the dawn of World War I. Now, that fell drastically, and in 1962, the group became the Maccabees Mutual Life Insurance Company. For more than 30 years, the Maccabees operated almost exclusively as an insurance company, but through a series of corporate mergers, it essentially disappeared. But in 2008, the group reformed once again as a fraternal organization operating primarily in the state of Michigan. Let's talk about the Veiled Prophet Organization, also formed in 1878. Now, the girls honored at the Veiled Prophet Annual Ball are referred to as maids, and despite appearances, the group is open to people of all political persuasions. Now, it's common for secret societies to be established to protect a way of life, and a year before the Veiled Prophet Organization was founded, the Great Railroad Strike of 1877 saw thousands of workers fight for better wages and conditions, including an 8-hour work day and an end to child labor. Now, this became so contentious that armed troops were brought in to break up the strike, and the Veiled Prophet was formed to help maintain the status quo of keeping the poor down, reminding the working class they were beneath the elite and that blacks especially belonged to the lower class. Now, this organization was founded in St. Louis by Charles Slayback, a businessman who'd been a Confederate soldier, and the group had, when he formed it, he had three main goals. He wanted to organize events that recreated some of the festiveness of New Orleans Mardi Gras, wanted to challenge Chicago's economic growth, and respond to labor unrest and calls for social justice that had erupted the year before. Now, the plan was to create a myth of the Veiled Prophet of Khorasan, and then put on a parade and throw an elaborate ball every July 4th. And for over 100 years, this tradition continued, until blacks were allowed to join in 1979. But about that time, members began to see just how ridiculous the Veiled Prophet was. As a result, over the last 40 years, it has transformed into something much more wholesome and inclusive. Today, the annual ball is a St. Louis tradition open to everybody, with fairs and parades and fundraisers for nonprofit and civic organizations. And that's turned into Bohemian Club, formed in 1872. Now, the waiting list to join is 28,000 names, and the waiting list is 28,000, and it's 15 years long. Women are welcome as guests, but they have to leave the Grove at night. Now, sometimes a club will start with a small goal, gathering for creative types interested in culture, only to outgrow the original plans, and such is the case with the Bohemian Club of San Francisco. It was founded after the Civil War as a place for writers, artists, actors, journalists, and lawyers to get together. When they started inviting politicians and businessmen to join, well, things changed. The group's name focuses on the urban culture type of bohemian, rather than the starving artist type, who ironically would become a mainstay of the San Francisco scene roughly 100 years after the group was created. 6 years after the club started, it launched an annual tradition in which the members went off for 2 weeks to a 2,700-acre property in Sonoma, California, known as the Bohemian Grove. And at this little conclave, all kinds of activities take place. Athletics, hikes, campfires. Rumor has it, orgies. As well as conferences that fuel the notion that a lot more sinister things are afoot. Closer to reality, it's a bunch of rich guys . Recent estimates show that the club has about 2,500 members. But all these wealthy people head into the woods for a couple of weeks each summer to frolic with their own kind. Reportedly began with, according to a 2009 Vanity Fair article, macabre hokey ceremony with druidic, masonic, Ku Klux Klan, and Aryan forest worship overtones, called the Cremation of Care. And from there, a 16-day encampment begins. Now, the rest of the year, the members congregate at their city club in downtown San Francisco. Current membership roles are secret, but the roster is known to be filled with politicians, captains of industry, and a lot more of the rich and powerful. And there have been a lot of interesting rumors about the Bohemian Club. And let's talk about political groups. Trying to change the course of history is frankly a dangerous pursuit, and it's best conducted under the cover of secrecy. Reserving the status quo for the powerful is sometimes an equally clandestine effort. Power, taking it, holding it, hanging on to it, these aren't an easy task, whether you're a peasant or a politician. Shaping people's minds and bending the arc of history happen both out in the open and behind closed doors. Secret societies have, of course, helped fuel empires, revolutions, pipe dreams, and even helped maintain the status quo. China's boxers helped sustain the dynasty long after it would have fallen. Meanwhile, the Carbonari helped drive a fractured Italy toward unification. People have started secret political orders to demean other members of society, such as the Knights of the Golden Circle and the Order of the Star-Spangled Banner. Knights of the Golden Circle, I am told, is still in existence. Sometimes a secret political society forms so powerful people can get together in a low-pressure environment. Business and politics are thick as thieves, often literally. So the Bohemian Club is a great example of that. In D.C., the mystique of the Chowdhury Marching Club probably exceeds its actual power, but it does provide the fodder for those who worry about how much influence Congress people and the lobbyists they often become may exert over what government does. And, of course, we have the Bilderberger Group. Many believe it's the most likely to feed the conspiracy theories. So we're going to talk about all these things. In the late 1200s, we have the White Lotus Society. Most later rebellions that were tied to the White Lotus Society had, in fact, nothing to do with it. On the other hand, the Chinese crime syndicate known as the Triads is a direct descendant of the original White Lotus. Now, some violent revolutions come from peaceful origins. The White Lotus emerged out of Buddhism, but quickly moved away from a focus on being one with the planet and to fomenting change. At the time, the idea that men and women might interact freely was not mainstream theory, but when a group of Buddhists combined their tenets with the dualistic beliefs of the Chinese Manichaeans, that's what happened. The group was strictly vegetarian and egalitarian at a time when that just wasn't accepted. The Mongols ruled China with an iron hand in the late 13th century, and those freethinkers began to rebel against the oppression. They hid their planning and activities behind incense-burning ceremonies, which became associated with the society over time. In fact, the image of the White Lotus monk with the long beard and the flowing hair became the norm for many kung fu movies from the 70s and 80s. Now, later, around the year 1330, a Buddhist monk named Ping Ying Yu began studying the White Lotus. And soon he was organizing a revolution. Now, the revolution failed, and he was eventually killed in a second uprising years later, but the seeds had been planted, and a legend was born. And through the centuries, as various invaders and dynasties dominated a fractured China, the White Lotus continually returned as a symbol for people's revolution. Throughout the 14th century, the 17th, 18th, and into the 19th, the White Lotus would reappear and violence would follow. In fact, to this day in China, the White Lotus and related religious sects are outlawed by the communist government. Well, one of the more famed Chinese secret societies was the Boxers. It was formed in 1898. It was known as the Boxers because of the members' skill with Chinese boxing. But they initially called themselves the National Righteousness Group. Now, nationalism has long fueled secret societies, and not just in the U.S. Now, today it's hard to imagine China being carved up by foreign powers, but that's where things were. And near the end of the 19th century, when a group of Chinese peasants banded together around a sect of martial artists who'd gone to launch the first major rebellion of the 20th century. The Qing Dynasty in China had lost much political and military power to imperialist invaders. Millions died, and people were just really fed up with things. As Christian missionaries and the Eight Nation Alliance of Western Nations and Japan exerted greater influence, the Society of Righteous and Harmonious Fist, also known as the Boxers, rose up in northern China to defend the nation. They practiced chanting and whirling and saw themselves as immune to foreign weapons. Didn't quite work out that way, but that was their belief. Now, the society was secret at first, but soon thousands joined and the revolution spread to Beijing, where the Boxers executed some foreigners. Their leader of the Qing Dynasty, Empress Dowager Zhu Zi, backed the Boxer Rebellion. Only when other provinces refused to carry out orders to exile or kill foreigners, and more than 20,000 foreign soldiers were advancing on the country, did the revolution come to an end. By early September 1901, it was over. Organizers were punished, and the Qing Dynasty, though it lasted for another 11 years until 1912, that was the last Chinese royal dynasty. 1912, China became a republic. In fact, if you ever saw the movie, 1987, The Last Emperor, that's a fairly representative retelling of what happened. Now, it's believed that more than 100,000 people died in the Boxer Rebellion. Most of them civilians just got caught in the crossfire. The David Niven movie and with Charlton Heston, 55 Days to Peking, talks about how the Boxers attacked the foreign embassies. Let's go to the U.S. and talk about the Order of the Star-Spangled Banner, formed in 1849. Horace Greeley, a well-known newspaper publisher, congressman, and unsuccessful presidential candidate, was the man who dubbed the group the Know-Nothings. Listen, 200 years ago, alarmed by the rising number of Irish, Italian, and German immigrants to the U.S., and a Catholic nativist formed a secret order of the Star-Spangled Banner in New York City. It called for restrictions on immigration, voting, and citizenship, and they soon opened lodges in cities across the country. Though initially a secret society, they stopped being secret when it became clear people liked their narrow-mindedness. Excuse me. Members were initially told to say they know nothing about the organization. Well, the group soon turned to politics, first as the Know Nothing Party and later as the American Party. In 1852, the party won several local and state elections. With the passing of the 1854 Kansas-Nebraska Act, many conservatives felt they could not align with either pro-slavery Democrats or with abolitionist Republicans. Well, the American Party offered these conflicting lawmakers a winning compromise, and it took 43 seats in Congress for the year 1855. It was the best it ever did, though, as the North-South divide eventually tore the country apart. After the Civil War, Southern alumni, the Order of the Star-Spangled Banner, started the Ku Klux Klan. Recently, as 2010, its ideological heirs formed the Tea Party, so that legacy, at least, is intact. You know, Martin Scorsese made a movie in 2002 called Gangs in New York, and it showcases a blazing performance as Daniel Day-Lewis plays a real-life character called Bill the Butcher, a proud member of the Know-Nothings. For 1862, the time and the events of the film, where the time and the event, one more time. The time and the events of the film take place, the party's mostly gone and civil war's begun. The film doesn't really get into their philosophy, but you get the idea by watching what goes on. And while they're painted as totally evil in the film, that really wasn't the case. Then we have the Knights of the Golden Circle that were formed in 1854. Now, one legend states that the Knights of the Golden Circle plotted to kidnap Abraham Lincoln in the late 1860, after his election, before his inauguration as president. Now, secret societies have formed for many reasons, but the most venal and racist example, according to many, is the Knights of the Golden Circle. Their entire purpose was annexing territory to establish a new confederacy so that it would perpetuate slavery. Now that's dark, but according to some theorists, it gets worse. As the South was losing the Civil War, the Knights of the Golden Circle went underground, using the wealth it had stockpiled. Some believed it evolved into the KKK, or at least used the KKK as its military wing for 50 years after the war ended. Others believed the group ceased to exist in 1863 at the height of the war, with some members organizing the Order of American Knights. And nobody knows how much of the story about this is actually true. What is known is that George W.I. Bickley started the group in Lexington, Kentucky in 1854. He planned to colonize northern Mexico, Cuba, Nicaragua, and some West Indies islands to continue with slavery. He claimed the group had over 100,000 members, but there were many who disagreed with that. As the southern states seceded from the Union in 1861, northern Republicans accused southern Democrats of being under the Knights of the Golden Circle influence. Now, there's no obvious evidence that the group had that kind of control. Many dismissed them as kooks. They had supporters for sure, and one alleged member did assassinate President Lincoln, but the Knights of the Golden Circle is a relic of a dark period in American history. Though there have been a number of stories about the fact that tremendous amounts of wealth were stolen at the end of the Civil War and hidden under the control of various members of this. Jesse James was supposed to be one. I know of some professional treasure hunters who've spent their life digging up Knights of the Golden Circle wealth, and they have found a good bit. In fact, when the Confederate treasury vanished somewhere around El Paso in 1865, it's supposed to have been hidden by members of the Knights of the Golden Circle, and it's still hidden somewhere. All right, let's see what other groups we've got. Let's talk about the Chowder and Marching Club, which was formed in 1949. Now, there are no officers, no bylaws, no constitution, not even a clubhouse. And co-founder Richard Nixon called it the most ill-organized, disorderly organization I know about. Now, the best secret societies are those whose members don't acknowledge they exist, and Washington, D.C.'s Chowder and Marching Club is an outstanding example. Back in 2014, then-Congresswoman Elena Rose Lathenium of Florida denied knowing what the group was until she was presented with a picture she'd tweeted of herself wearing the group's trademark chef's torque and striped apron with the Cubs name printed on it. At that point, she admitted the first rule about chowder is we don't talk about chowder. Kind of like Fight Club, don't you know? 1949, back when Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford were young members of the House of Representatives, they co-founded the group in reaction to a veterans pension bill that they wanted to defeat. Their philosophy has always been, nothing's too good for the veterans, so damn it, give them nothing. In the process, they somehow started this very mysterious club. Even the name's origins is in question, though it may have to do with a line in the 1933 Cary Grant film, The Woman Accused. What is known is that the club meets Wednesday nights in room H107 of the U.S. Capitol when Congress is in session. A few Republican representatives, but not the senators, gathered to eat, drink, and talk policy, though little if any legislation ever comes out of it, or at least that's what they say. It took over 40 years for women to be invited. More troubling is the rule that members always have access even after they leave office and become lobbyists. That's how power and money make happy bedfellows, don't you know? Now let's talk about a group that we know exists, and that's the Bilderberg Group. Formed in 1954. Annual meetings are closed to the public and to journalists to ensure open dialogue, but of course this contributes to conspiracy theories. But the Illuminati and the Masons get the lion's share of the conspiracy theories, of course. But any connoisseur of such thinking knows that the Bilderberg Group is ground zero for folks who worry about world domination. It's an annual conference begun in 1954 in the Netherlands. It gets its name from the hotel where it first held. The concept was to establish a forum for informal discussion to foster dialogue between Europe and North America. Each year, about 130 political leaders and experts from industry, finance, labor, academia, and media meet to address global issues. Titles and positions aren't recognized, so people show up not as individuals, but as representatives of their countries. So as the group points out, participants are free to use the information received, but neither the identity nor the affiliation of the speaker nor of any other participant is revealed. So people can get all kinds of ideas from other world leaders, take them home and use them without having to give anybody else credit, which is a perfect scenario. The group's influence is undeniable, though. The attendees, including top European leaders, are incredibly powerful people who discuss major issues. Of course, when powerful people discuss and address global issues, some think they're talking less about how to make the world a better place and more about how to make the world a better place for them. Participants insist there's nothing sinister about the Bilderberg Group, saying it has in fact made significant contribution to the world. Of course, those contributions are kept secret. So they're secret contributions. And the interestingly enough, two of the original founders were actually, from what I understand, members of the Nazi Party. And when Bill Clinton was a unknown governor of the poorest state in the country, but he was running for president, he got invited to come talk, and he was elected. Hillary is invited to attend, but not allowed to talk. She didn't get elected. Let's talk about fraternal orders. You know, from the Druids and Oddfellas to the Elks, Moose, Shriners, and more. These are not so secret societies to keep community and charity humming in the 20th century. They try to stay relevant through long-standing service programs. Now, these fraternal orders are not clandestine, but they do have their secrets. There are hundreds, of which we'll talk about a few, because they share many traits with secret societies, including rules, rites, clubhouses, terminology, organizational and ceremonial structures. In fact, one was formed by Freemasons who just wanted to have fun. Times have changed, though, and our world seems too fast-paced for these relics. In the 20th century, service organizations, fraternal orders, were a big part of America's social and commercial world. Businessmen sat for lunch to talk shop, rub elbows, other pillars of the community. Then they might gather at the local lodge, share cocktails, cookouts, celebrations, wear a few sheets, solidify friendships based on shared attitudes and histories. In fact, some groups are essential to American experience. Dozens of TV shows parodied them. Till the 70s, many of these views were exclusionary, but as attitudes evolved, most people opened up to women and people of color to more accurately reflect the country. Now, these organizations still exist, but their members are, on average, a lot older now. So much social activity happening online, many fraternal organizations see their numbers dwindling. Long-standing traditions of charity and service, though, keep these groups relevant and engaged, and the need for good works never changes, no matter how much the world may seem to evolve. Well, the first one we're going to talk about started in 1781. It was the Ancient Order of Druids. The group began meeting at Stonehenge in 1905 after making its then owner, Sir Edmund Antrobus, a member of the society. Now, this is one of the earliest of these groups, named for a pagan religion, but formed for social reasons. It's still around, impressively enough, and while it fits many of the categories we've talked about, its philanthropic nature resembles the fraternal orders of the 20th century. Now, secret societies form for any number of reasons, even if it's just a few guys looking for an excuse to get together and tie one on. Sometimes, especially if it's just a few guys looking for an excuse to drink. People say the Ancient Order of Druids came together in 1781 when a bunch of merchants at the King's Arms Tavern in London West End formed a society to keep out the undesirables. And somebody, after their fifth or sixth drink, came up with the bright idea to call themselves Druids after the ancient religious sect. There's another story. They came together to honor a dead friend and lift a glass in his honor. Membership was restricted to men who took vows of secrecy, and it's generally thought the meetings were filled with music and singing and drinking. Even so, the group was controversial. A string of chapters spouted across England in the late 18th century. Of course, the French Revolution of 1789 terrified the English upper class, so the government began cracking down on secret societies. This particular development, combined with dissatisfaction about membership fees and centralized leadership, led to a schism. Group calling itself the United Ancient Order of Druids split away first. Then there was another group, the Order of the Druids. After World War I, the three groups reunited. Of course, most of their records were destroyed in the Blitz during World War II. The first U.S. Grove of Druids formed in 1830 in New York, and in 1858, they made it to California, the land of fruits and nuts. Today, the Ancient Order of Druids is a mostly philanthropic society. There's another group called the Ancient Order of Druids in America that traces its lineage to Masons and Rosicrucians. It's a neo-pagan religion that sees Druidism as a past to nature, spirituality, and inner transformation founded on personal experience. It's not a secret society. And sometimes when you listen to them talk, you realize you're listening to people who heard Don Quixote and didn't get the joke. You know, it's a small bit in a classic mockumentary about a fake heavy metal band. It's said to have inspired This Is Spinal Tap. Before the title, rockers perform a song called Stonehenge. Singer David St. Hubbins, Michael McKean, talks about a time years before the dawn of history when the Druids gave us this ancient wonder in the south of England. I've been to Stonehenge. Interesting place. Now let's talk about the Oddfellows, formed in 1806. Though almost 300 years of existence, there have been dozens of iterations into the Oddfellows before the modern incarnation was established. Seems strange that a group of working-class people wanting to form a club to hang out and help each other was seen as bizarre. And yet in the 18th century, England was indeed seen as very peculiar. Some even called it odd. Okay, as always, if somebody's got something to sell, they find my number. Now, when enough folks decided to get together, they were all called odd, so they decided to call their group the Oddfellows. Now, alternate stories said the members did odd jobs or weren't members of guilds as the Masons were, which made them considered odd. The Oddfellows first came to the U.S. in 1806 as a remote lodge connected to the English original, but it didn't break away till 1843, when it officially became the Independent Order of Oddfellows. 8 years later, it formed the Sisters of Rebecca to allow women to participate. After the Civil War, Oddfellow members from both the Union and the Confederacy worked together to rebuild areas that were devastated by the war. The group's fascination with skeletons is one of its secrets and points of interest, as they sometimes cause a ruckus. In Virginia, an electrician working at an International Order of Oddfellows Lodge opened a closet and found a human skeleton. I mean, he was dumbfounded. Spent a long time trying to decide what to do, and finally he called the cops, and the town buzzed for days trying to figure out whose bones had been found. Now, the Oddfellows keep bones because they signify mortality, but the uninitiated aren't supposed to see them. It's kind of like Fight Club. First rule of Fight Club, you don't talk about Fight Club. At their height in 1922, there were more than 6 million. Today, they're about 600,000. Another fraternal order is the Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks, formed in 1868. Elks have, like to say that before, that the BPOE stands for the best people on earth. The group initially used secret passwords but abandoned that practice in 1899 because nobody could remember what they were. Now, if you want to get around local laws that say when your tavern can be open, well, just found your own private club. That's how the Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks started in New York City in 1868. A group of minstrel performers called the Jolly Corks wanted to be able to drink whenever they chose. So they borrowed rules and rituals from Freemasonry while restricting membership to white men only. In 1919, with communism sweeping Eastern Europe, the Elks passed a Flag Day resolution barring any member who wasn't ready to give undivided allegiance to the country and the flag. Well, like many orders, the Elks fought long and hard to stay whites only. Finally opened up in 1973. And even with that opening, they barred women until 1995. It's a bit ironic, then, that part of the Elks' credo is to uphold the U.S. Constitution. Through the years, it's evolved from a private society to a more service-oriented club that helps vets and the disabled. Many Elks have very recognizable names. Members include President Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, John F. Kennedy, Gerald Ford. Entertainers such as Ben Affleck and Harry Houdini. And athletes such as Eli Manning and Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth hasn't attended many meetings lately, so... Currently, there are close to 1 million members worldwide. In some towns, Elk Lodges are popular again thanks to location, low prices, and a need to see friendly faces. And the fact that you can drink whenever they're open. Alrighty, let's talk about Shriners. Formed in 1870. All Shriners are Masons, but not all Masons are Shriners. In fact, only Master Masons can be Shriners. So next time you see a fez-top man in a tiny car, show some respect. You know, there's more Shriners in funny hats, mini cars and parades, and Grand Moorish Revival temples. 1870, some New York Freemasons were looking for a little less ritual, a little more fun. Actor William Florence had become fascinated with Arabic culture while traveling abroad. Walter Fleming, a doctor, ran with the concept and created the ancient Arabic Order of the Nobles of the Mystic Shrine, or Shriners for short. The Arabic culture theme explains the hat, known as the fez, and the distinctive architecture. Now, membership grew quickly, spawning new lodges and temples all over the world. Men rushed up to join a club dedicated to brotherly love, relief, and truth. Charitable work started early, 1922, amid a polio epidemic. Shriners opened their first children's hospitals in Shreveport, Louisiana. Since that time, they founded 21 other children's hospitals. The Shriner Motor Units had helped to advertise the club, raise money for hospitals, as does an annual Las Vegas golf event. They've been accused of being a cult and of shady financial dealings, but the only thing they'll admit to is they don't allow women, saying that same-sex groups are more productive. They do have lady auxiliaries, though. Today, there are almost 200 temples and thousands of clubs that serve about 350,000 members worldwide. Yes, you know, some of the grandest Shriners clubs now have other uses. The Shrine Auditorium in Los Angeles hosts concerts and award shows, such as the Oscar and the Emmys. Across the country, the Mecca Temple, which the Shriners lost in the Great Depression, is now New York City Center, a home for the performing arts. And, you know, you hear a lot of interesting stories. The question is, how many of them are true? And the last one we're going to talk about today, if we have enough time, is Moose International. The Moose is Loose. Formed in 1888, the auxiliary organization, Women of the Moose, was started in 1913. More than 500,000 members is almost as big as the main Moose group. Long history of racial discrimination in America, not just the obvious public kind. Restriction or excluding people because of their race or religion has long been practiced by secret societies and country clubs, companies, and other large institutions. But most fraternal organizations, though, tend to be more inclusive. But the Loyal Order of Moose was formed in part to give white men, especially working-class whites, a financial safety net. So the Moose was restricted to the 1970s. And though the name's origin's unknown, it's believed the founder, John Henry Wilson, was inspired by the Elks, formed 20 years before. And we have run out of time, so we'll talk more about the moose being loose tomorrow. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.